Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Okay, hope you had a great weekend. I had a run to New York. I'm back in SoCal. Had a great weekend there. Good to be home. Lots to get to. Crazy weekend in college football. Another good weekend in the NFL. And a lot more. Let's get started. Telephone number is toll free. 1-800-636-8686. Use the telephone. Get on hold. Call me up right now. Toll free. 1-800-636-8686. You also know to hit me on Twitter. You also know that we're going with 140 characters, not 280. They may have gone to 280, but we haven't. We're still at 140. You're going to get run. Alvin's got a Twitter hammer. He's not afraid to use it. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Just make sure that character count does not go beyond 140. Also, email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Coming up in about 15 minutes, my man Jason LaCanfora, CBS Sports NFL insider. I love him coming in on a Monday. Number one, there's so much to cover. And number two, I know the way this guy works. I know what his routine is on Sundays. So to get him early on Monday morning is a really good thing because he grinds. JLC grinds. I've seen him in New York on Sundays. I know what he does. So we're going to run him down in about 15 minutes. Top of hour number two, Detroit Lions running back Theo Riddick. Third hour's wide open right now. We are efforting a number of people as a possibility for a third guest. On a Monday, you know we've got the ATP. Go ahead and hit that up. And last chance for voicemail. We've got a great podcast dropping tomorrow. The Jim Rome podcast drops every single Tuesday. A great one coming up tomorrow. Last chance. That voicemail box. Man, that freaking voicemail box. Still there. Every single week, I fight with this, and I'm not sure why I haven't just ripped that thing out of the wall. Honestly, I'm not even playing games here. I don't know why I haven't done that. And I keep thinking to myself, one more time. We're going to turn the corner. We haven't turned the corner, but it lives to fight one more week. So make it work. Make me feel better about this. Write this number down. And the number may be gone in about a week, but you'll have it for at least a week in your phone. Put it next to Rome, 949-385-0447. My personal number, my voicemail box, 949-385-0447. 949 for life, baby. 818 for life. 818 for life. I'm about that Ventura Boulevard lifestyle.
818 for life.
818 for life. Just my voicemail is 949. Yeah, but if you want to see my ink, I've got 818 on my back. You know that. Well, I'll start with the Dallas Cowboys. I've got no ink anywhere. But if I did, it would be 818 for life. I want to start with the Cowboys. I could have started any number of different places in the NFL, but let's start with the Cowboys. Because Jerry Jones had himself a couple of days, didn't he? Threatening to sue his fellow owners, losing Ezekiel Elliott, and then getting smashed 27-7 by the Falcons. Everyone has a case of the Mondays, but at this point, my man's got to be feeling lower than a crippled cricket's ass. Where do we even start? How about with the absurdity of one owner threatening to sue other owners, or the absurdity of the vaunted Dallas offensive line getting taken to the cleaners by the Falcons? Let's do the latter, because as much as Dallas missed Ezekiel Elliott, I'm going to go ahead and say that they missed left tackle Tyron Smith a whole lot more, because Atlanta's Adrian Claiborne just embarrassed Dallas without him. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six sacks. That's an entire season in a single game. Actually, that's more than Claiborne's had in each of the last five seasons, and he had it in 60 minutes yesterday. This guy straight abused them.
They have not been the same team we've watched the last 3 weeks.
Hey, knocked out of his hand, and that's Claiborne again. And McKinley gets on top of it for Atlanta. Adrian Claiborne strips Dak Prescott, and another turnover.
It's a speed move. Short of one spin move where he started up the field and came underneath, every pressure that he has had has been a speed rush right around the edge.
Six sack game for Adrian Claiborne.
There's a key point to be made here. It is a speed move. It is a speed move, but it's his only move. That's the only thing this guy does. And he said it himself. I only have one move and it worked. So he's running the same move over and over and over again. And he's getting to Dak Prescott every single time. That move was practically Kareem Skyhook or Mariano's cutter because Dallas had no chance against it. I mean, they knew what was coming, and they still could not stop it. And while the blocking may have been garbage, they were not garbage time sacks. Garbage. He had a pair of strip sacks, two that pushed Dallas out of field goal range, and two that came on third down. So that was bad. Really, really bad. In terms of Jerry threatening to sue his fellow owners, after the game, Jerry had to be thinking about suing his offensive line and his offensive line coach instead of the other owners. But speaking of lawsuits, there's no way he's actually serious about suing the other owners, right? I mean, that's got to be Jerry just being Jerry, jumping into the spotlight, stirring it up a bit, because that's what he does better than anybody else. Well, maybe not. One source told MMQB that, quote, there is little question in my mind that Jerry Jones wants to overthrow Roger Goodell, end quote. Overthrow. He wants to overthrow Roger Goodell. I mean, is this a football league or a small country? Apparently, Jerry really is bent about how much money Roger Goodell might make in his new deal. And you've probably seen the contract demands. He wants a private jet for life. Health insurance for his family for life. You know, I keeps a private jet for life. Why stop there? I mean, if you're going to ask for a private jet for life, why not ask for a private jet for life and for your kid's life and their kid's life? How about a private jet in perpetuity for the entire generation of Goodells going forward? You know he keeps a private jet for life. Oh, Alvy, I see what you did there. Hey, Alvy, how long do you think that Roger Goodell wants to keep a private jet? Uh-oh! Anyway, Jerry's making it sound as if it's about his contractual demands. Goodell's demands. And some of those things have leaked, and it does make the commissioner look pretty bad. I mean, it makes him look bad because over the last several years, he's made more money than anybody playing in that league. More money than anybody playing in any league, with the exception of two other athletes. So I would get into the details of that deal, the compensation committee meetings, Jerry's status as an ad hoc member. But honestly, and I think you'd probably agree with me on this, there's nothing more boring than billionaires fighting with millionaires over money, unless it's billionaires threatening to sue other billionaires over a millionaire's money. Does that make sense? Do you need me to run that back? Just know it's really boring. Rich people fighting extraordinarily rich people for money. Look, you can try to convince me that this isn't about Roger Goodell suspending Jerry star player Ezekiel Elliott, and that it really is about Jones having a problem with the job that Goodell has done aside from Ezekiel Elliott and the money he's asking for. You could try to convince me of that, but it's going to take a lot of convincing because Jerry voted to give Goodell an extension back in May. But then he changed his tune after Elliott's suspension was announced in August. Now, when Tom Brady was getting suspended, he didn't really seem to have a big problem with Goodell or his discipline system, did he? But when it was his guy, he suddenly has lots of problems. When it's his guy, he's reportedly telling owners on the compensation committee that he has, quote, papers drawn up to sue them if they don't kick that contract back to the rest of the 32 owners. And again, not to get caught up in the minutiae of the thing, that's not the way they negotiate the commissioner's contract. They don't kick it back to 32 other owners. That's why they have a committee or a compensation committee to make a recommendation to the owners who generally accept it. Look, I'm going to be honest. I really don't care about Roger Goodell's compensation. I really don't. I really don't care about owners suing other owners. I really don't. I'm not even sure how much Cowboy fans care about it either, but I know what they do care about. They care about the fact that they're 5-4 and they have not won a Super Bowl in more than 20 years. And if the season ended right now, they'd miss the playoffs. They care a lot more about that than they do about how much the commissioner gets paid. And maybe, just maybe, Jerry should be more focused on that than threatening lawsuits. And one more thought. Speaking of Brady and the Patriots, what do you think that Bob Kraft is thinking right about now? Kraft had arguably the best player ever suspended, and not a running back, but a quarterback, and maybe the best quarterback ever. And on top of that, they had a first and a fourth ripped from them, and a $1 million fine. And for what? Deflating some footballs. Maybe. And Kraft pretty much had to sit back and take it. And you can bet that Jones probably was telling him, be a good partner, Bob. Suck it up, Bob. Yet when it happens to Jarrah, and by the way, it's not over deflating footballs. It's over domestic violence allegations. Now Jerry's not sucking it up. Jerry's not being the good partner. He's looking to sue his partners and overthrow the same commissioner that he probably told Bob Kraft that he had to respect. That's pretty rich. And I guarantee Kraft thinks so. Again, the commissioner is not your problem, nor the reason you haven't won a Super Bowl in more than 20 years. And believe me, Jerry going rogue is not going to get them any closer to that goal either. He's not had a real good week. Your thoughts, Cowboy fans, Patriot fans, anybody, 1-800-636-8686. Why do you think Jerry's this upset? Is he trying to get rid of Goodell because Goodell's not earning his money, because Goodell's asking for too much money, because he over-disciplines the players, because he hasn't done a good job of explaining declining TV ratings, because he didn't handle the anthem protest right? Or is it because he suspended Ezekiel Elliott? Dear Jim, Jerry Jones's contract dispute with Roger Goodell has absolutely nothing at all to do with Ezekiel Elliott's suspension. Sincerely, my wife's saying, I'm not mad, when I ask her why she hasn't spoken to me for the past 39 months. Denlesk's devoted husband. And one more. Dear Jerry, I got your back when it comes to overthrowing the NFL commish. Sincerely, Brock Lobster. Any reason to play that great song is good. And notice, that wasn't the Lobster's fault they got hammered. Denver's got lots of problems, and he's not the only one. Justin from Melbourne is in. Drew, that's me. Drew, you know when Jerry Jones says his beef with Goodell isn't about his personal beef? It means the same thing as an athlete saying their contract isn't about the money. Signed, Roland in Pittsburgh. Yeah, I'm guessing it's got everything to do with Ezekiel Elliott and not nothing to do with Ezekiel Elliott. But what are your thoughts? All right, so I spent the entire open on that. I've got lots more to get to. I want to talk about the Broncos. I want to talk about the Saints and that beatdown they laid on the Bills. I want to talk about the Rams being 7-2 if you need them. Crazy weekend in college football, which I want to cover as well. 1-800-636-8686. I'm feeling pretty spry. The Browns, choking Browns. Man, thank goodness they woke up just in time. Nearly blew a perfect season again. That story's coming up. Got JLC, Jason Lockenfora in 5 minutes. Theo Riddick, top of the hour. Open phone lines for the rest of you right now.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
When you demand more from your vehicle, your motor oil needs to go the distance too. JLC coming up in a moment. Have you heard about a new annual protection motor oil that is selling at some retailers for up to $45 for 5 quarts? That's funny to me. Why would anybody buy that? Especially when you can buy Castrol Edge Advanced Full Synthetic Motor Oil. Castrol Edge, 3 times stronger than Mobil 1 against viscosity breakdown. And that's according to the Kurt Orban test on the 5W30 VisGrade. It costs a lot less. It's got the strength to go 15,000 miles between oil changes. Real muscle to power your engine better than some other annual protection plan that costs more. Titanium strong Castrol Edge works harder. It lasts longer. It costs less. And it's the only motor oil formulated with fluid titanium technology for maximum engine performance. Use Castrol Edge, the edge you need for power, protection, and performance. Castrol, more than just an oil, it is liquid engineering. As promised, we are joined by a content machine, a podcast waiting to happen, the NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS, but it's only one of a million things that he does every single week. JLC, Jason Lockenfora, is my guest. Jason, how you doing on Monday morning after another big weekend?
Can't complain, brother. Always good having you in studio. Enjoyed kicking in a little bit yesterday. And don't act like you're not busy yourself, dude.
No, I'm not as busy as you. I got some things going on, but not like that. But it's good to be back. Good to have you back. All right, so New England goes out last night, Jason. They were absolutely smashed by the Broncos, 41-16. I know you were confident that the Patriots were going to win that game comfortably. So what did you make of what you saw from both those teams last night?
I mean, to me, it's vintage New England in that it wasn't necessarily – I mean, what, I think Tom Brady had like 100 passing yards at the half. It wasn't wasn't a tour de force. It wasn't they didn't play the perfect game. They didn't have their, you know, their perfect stuff. But they win going away because they exploited special teams. They made big plays when they had to. They didn't beat themselves, and they let the other team sort of implode. And, I mean, look, Brock Osweiler, he's made a lot of money. God love him. But they need to get a look at Paxton Lynch. I don't want to hear he's not mentally ready. I mean, the shoulder's been enough to practice for a few weeks now. There's people in the building who thought he should have been more in the equation even for week 10. They're going to have to make that switch. They're a team very much in transition. I didn't like the body language of their defense the last few weeks because it's starting to look like an impossible task because they're never going to get any run support to keep my lame baseball metaphors going. So, yeah, I kind of smelled that one coming. Osweiler actually functioned better than I thought he would for the meaningful part of that game, but the second half quickly became more or less obsolete. And, you know, Vance Joseph looks overwhelmed to me at times. You know, that was a sort of out there, outside the box pick by John Elway. And he wanted a young coach who wasn't going to give him a whole lot of pushback. You know, he had kind of gone through the wars with Fox and Kubiak a little bit. And he got what he wanted, but I just don't know that Vance Joseph was ready to be an NFL head coach. And I get the sense there's people in that building wondering as much now as they still have a good portion of games to play and have quickly become non-competitive over the last month.
Jason, looking forward to joining us. You know, all of this brings to note also an absolute sledgehammer of a tweet that you laid down last night. Quote, Broncos have a lot more in common with the Giants than you would admit. Differences, Denver quarterback change coming sooner. A strong, strong tweet. So why don't we go to the Giants for a minute? We were both in New York over the weekend. The Giants are coming off a double-digit loss to the previously 0-9 49ers, Jason. I know they've had a ton of injuries, but how did they get this bad? Or how did things get this bad this quickly for a team with serious aspirations at the start of the year?
Yeah, I didn't see this coming, I have to admit. And I'm going to take the injuries out of it. This has been a horrendous year for injuries around the league. And they, you know, losing Odell Beckham, and I mean, I get all that, but they stunk before that. I mean, they had barely a pulse before, you know, when they did have Odell Beckham in the lineup. And in a year where there's so many bad teams, and you can't even beat the bad teams in a down year, when you came into the year thinking legitimately 10-11 wins again, you know, division's going to be tougher, but, you know, no reason we can't be in the thick of it. And you were out of it by Halloween almost. I don't have the answers, Jim, and I get the sense they don't have the answers. And, you know, things snowball, and it's easy to turn on a coach, especially, you know, a young coach who had a lot of success last year and everything kind of happened kind of easily for them. So I don't think Ben McAdoo has all the answers, but they've got a personnel problem. They've had a draft problem. They've had an offensive line problem. Look, they're going to have to blow that thing up at the end of the year. I get the sense that ownership is getting their mind around that, and I suspect they start thinking about, you know, alternatives sooner rather than later. It's just not in that family's DNA to fire people before Thanksgiving, you know, or even to fire people in season. And the concern there is that you're sending a message to that locker room, which clearly is displaying some unprofessional attributes, that, okay, we're going to acquiesce to you, and we'll fire this coach, and we'll give you what you want. They don't want to send that message. And I would just say this also. It's not just going to be the coach and the GM who's gone. You know, there's going to be a lot of guys who made a lot of money from them the last few years who are going to have to answer to ownership, and they might not like what they hear back.
CBS Sports NFL insider Jason Lockenfora joining us. Now, on top of that, you and I spoke yesterday on the NFL and CBS about the situation with Jerry Jones and the commissioner, Roger Goodell. What is the latest with their situation now, for those who don't know?
Yeah, I mean, look, there is certainly, you know, Jerry Jones versus the NFL at large and Roger Goodell in particular will be an ongoing battle. He's waging it, though, primarily as a PR battle and through the media. In terms of what he can actually do to affect change to a process that is pretty much at the finish line when it comes to Roger Goodell's contract, the answer is less than nothing. I mean, if he wants to go out there and sue them for a case that wouldn't seem to have much merit because he himself authorized this process just a few months ago, and he was on board with it right up until Zeke Elliott got six games when he thought he was getting nothing.
Right.
You know, I guess he could go that route, but it's going to waste a lot of time, waste a lot of money. He's going to end up paying the NFL's legal fees because of it. And, you know, to the tune of, you know, tens of millions of dollars. For what? And he's going to further alienate himself from his business partners, who are already looking at him sort of askance and saying, what the hell got into you, dude? Like, you know, we're supposed to be kind of sort of in this together. You're the same guy who told Robert Kraft a few years ago, just take the hit, Bob. Just take the four games. Do it for the good of the league. Now you're freaking out over a running back to the point where you're threatening lawsuits against people. And I mean, he maybe has three other owners in his corner, tops. He needs 23 more. And it's funny, I did a radio show this morning, a different one, and somebody asked me, how's Roger Goodell going to mend fences? Like, Roger Goodell's got 28 owners in his corner. What the hell is Jerry Jones going to do to mend fences? There's people in the league saying, hey, Stephen Jones, step up, because your dad is taking this, you know, too far.
Jason, looking forward to joining us. You know, you can see where Jerry is trying to solidify that power base and get more and more power, but it looks like he's bleeding badly and he's losing power. And I don't see how that goes his way. Now, before you go, the Rams had another absurd blowout yesterday. In fact, Jason, you do things before. You're the guy who starts early, so I'm not sure if you were there at that part of the meeting. But Boomer Esiason and some of the other guys were saying, what's it like in L.A.? Is there a lot of buzz for the Rams? And I said, believe it or not, there's not. There still isn't. There's more and more, but there's still not a lot of buzz. It's not a Rams town. But then they go out and they have another absurd blowout yesterday. They destroy the Texans. Now, you were out here in California during training camp. You got a good look at what Sean McVay was building. What did you see then, and did you ever think that we'd be talking about the Rams being 7-2 with four straight double-digit wins?
I thought he was a rock star in the making. I thought he would do very good things with that offense immediately. I did not think they'd have one of the more productive, efficient, consistent offenses in the league. I did not think Jared Goff would be producing like this, and I certainly did not think that we would be pushing Thanksgiving talking about them as a viable one seed in the NFC. I thought, though, he would have a rookie year that would resonate. I didn't know that it would be completely historical, but I thought the foundation for a turnaround was in place and that he would become the face of that team and somebody who, you know, when he goes out to dinner with his girlfriend, turns up, you know, on TMZ or paparazzi. And it seems like a little bit of that's happening, and maybe that's the beginning of some sort of buzz or hype about them. And you know, maybe he becomes sort of the, you know, the cult of personality figure there, even more so than a Todd Gurley or a Jared Goff. But he's special. And enough people who've been in coaching a long time who've worked either above him or below him on staffs have been telling me since, you know, he was a not quite a quality control guy, but certainly by the time he was coaching tight ends in Washington. I mean, guys like Chris Cooley and London Fletcher, even then, you know, guys had relationships from covering that team. You know, they would text you from time to time, like, dude, you know, when you come to camp, you got to check out our tight ends coach. Like, this guy, he gets it. So, you know, kudos to the Rams for being willing to hire a guy that young. And I really don't think you can overstate the presence of he and his staff on that team. And just their ability to install an offense and incubate a quarterback and do what they have to do to win each week compared to what was going on there with that prior staff, particularly in the offensive side of the ball.
When has anybody ever said, quote, dude, when you come here, check out our tight ends coach?
Well, you know, do you know Cooley at all? Have you ever had Cooley on your
show? Oh, yeah, he's the best.
Cooley
sure.
on your show?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, Chris is good people. Yeah. I think that's probably a fairly accurate, you know, paraphrase of a conversation or a tweet from like 10 years ago.
No, I don't even mean how he said it, but the fact that they're saying, don't check out the head coach or the O coordinator or the D coordinator. Man, we got this crazy quality control guy you got to meet, or we got this tight ends coach you got to meet. Speaking of Cooley, JLC, before you go, how is your Be More podcast doing? And if folks want to listen to it, what will they hear and where do they find it?
Thanks, buddy. You can find us at www.bmoshow.com if there's any displaced Baltimoreans, we call ourselves that affectionately, or Marylanders out there. Yeah, we focus on Baltimore stuff every week. My partner, Jerry Coleman, and I. Jerry Coleman is actually, you're one of his media idols, and he's been begging me to have you on the podcast forever. So maybe I officially extend that invitation. I don't know that you have any ties to Baltimore. Maybe you've been to Pemlico with the ponies or something, but we'll have to figure that out. But yeah, we're on iTunes, Be More Opinionated, and we don't have a guest for this week yet, Jim. I'm efforting one, so I wish I had. Go listen to our Buck Showalter interview from 2 weeks ago.
You should definitely listen to that. I love Buck. I'm a huge Buck guy. I'd have to bone up on my Baltimore stuff to be up to speed for that, but we might be able to make that happen. JLC, NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He also appears every single Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. JLC, thanks so much. You're the best.
Always my pleasure, brother. Thank you.
See you soon. Jason Lockenfora, my man grinds hard. I have nothing but respect for guys who work like that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, Rome, real tough gig you guys have. They pay you to talk sports. We know. We get it. You're right. Period. No qualification. You are right. They pay morons like us to talk sports. It's an incredible job. It's the best job in the world, period. However, there are some people with these good jobs that work harder at it than other people with these good jobs, and I respect the guys that go hard. GLC grinds out. All right, still ahead. I've got an open segment next. I've got Theo Riddick, Lions running back at the top of the hour, and we are efforting a third guest. Nothing I want to jinx. Still ahead. The Denver Broncos. I mean, his tweet about how, quote, they have a lot more in common with the Giants than some would admit is really something. I want to get into Denver and what happened to them. Saints and Bills, that beatdown. I've been hyping the Saints now for several weeks, but to see what they did to Buffalo was unbelievable. Bills Mafia, this is why I always say to you, slow down. Slow the hell down. Don't get ahead of yourselves. Now look. Think about what you were thinking and saying a few weeks back, and now look at you and your team. Now what? And an amazing weekend of college football. Go ahead, Albie. You can get me to...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Monday is an ATP day, so you ask the pros, you get to ask me a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit your question. Be listening later on. I might answer it. Remember, submit it there. Do not go to Twitter or go to email with it. Do it at that address. Sign up and be an O-Rewards member today. Earn $5 back for every $150 you spend. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. If you're on hold, hang in there. I'm definitely going to take telephone calls. I just want to get another topic out there first. Now, remember when the Patriots were 2-2? And everybody was freaking out that Tom Brady was too old. It was the end of Belichick, Brady and the Pats. Or remember when Denver was 3-1 and everybody thought they were contending for a Super Bowl? Yeah, I don't either. Because nobody had either of those thoughts after New England went into Denver and smashed the Broncos 41-16 in prime time. So Denver's given up 51 to Philly last week, 41 to the Pats last night. And it might have actually been uglier than the scoreboard even indicated, if it's possible. Because Denver got off to a start that they would have wanted. They forced a punt on New England's first possession. And then this happened on the punt itself.
Great start by this Bronco defense. Ryan Allen, the left-footer, will punt it away. Isaiah McKenzie back and underneath it at the 27. He fumbles the football, and it is recovered by New England. Oh, man, you talk about sucking the life out of a stadium after a great start. Jonathan Jones down, I think, to make the recovery. And another huge mistake by Isaiah McKenzie. The Patriots have it first and 10 at the Denver 24.
Broncos radio, exactly what they could not afford. If you're trying to stop the bleeding, the last thing you want is your defense to come out and force a three and out and then to fumble the punt. Because two plays later, Rex Burkhead was in the end zone. But Brock Osweiler and the offense did bounce right back. He hits Emmanuel Sanders for 31 yards. Eventually, they end up with a field goal on their opening possession. Only for this to happen on the ensuing kickoff.
McManus sends the kickoff. Lewis fields it 2 yards deep and brings it out. 10, 15, 20. Lewis down the west sideline. 25, 30. Steps out of a tackle, and that's a foot race being chased and pushed out of bounds. He did not get pushed out of bounds. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, New England. Devontae Booker gave him a shove but didn't force him out of bounds. And special teams have killed the Broncos in the first part of this game against the New England Patriots. That return of 103 yards by Deion Lewis.
I mean, it's actually pretty hilarious. A fumbled punt and then a 103-yard kickoff return for a TD. Two special teams plays, two utter disasters. I thought that fumbling was the last thing that Denver could afford, but I was wrong. Giving up a 103-yard kickoff was way, way worse. You cannot do that against any NFL team, but especially against Tom Brady and the Pats, because they will kill you for it, and New England did just that. Brady finished 25 of 34, three touchdowns, and a QB rating of 125. Oh, and if that wasn't enough, in the second quarter, New England blocked a punt. So that's a fumbled punt that led to a TD. A kickoff return for a TD. A blocked punt that led to a field goal. 17 points worth of special teams blunders, and that's the Gordie Howe hat trick of sucking on special teams. And it was only the start. They almost dropped a kickoff, and had 12 men on the field during a Patriots punt that gave the Patriots the ball back, which led to another New England TD. So the issues in Denver have gone from being a quarterback problem to a quarterback and a defense problem to a quarterback, defense, and special teams problem. I'm not going to say that the QB room is infecting the special teams room, but I'm guessing it's not helping. Osweiler and the offense actually hung with the Patriots for a little while. I mean, kind of, sort of, almost. But Denver's special teams were just so bad that it was a blowout. As Justin Simmons pointed out, quote, "You can't give up 24 points on special teams and expect to win. It's unacceptable. We hurt ourselves more on special teams than defense," end quote. I mean, overall, morale is at an all-time low in Denver. All-time low. I've never seen it like that. Just ask Derek Wolfe, who said, quote, "I think we stink. It's just sad. It's real sad. It's sad that we went from a championship caliber team to a team that stinks and nobody respects us." It's an amazing quote. We stink. You know what's bad when a player is saying that? He's not looking for any silver lining. He's not trying to spin it. He's not going with something lame like, "We'll watch film. We'll get back to work." No, none of that. He's just flat out saying, "We stink. It's sad. Nobody respects us." And the crazy part is, he's right. It's a team loaded with Pro Bowlers, and nobody respects them right now. What's crazier? That they lost by 25, and it wasn't Brock Osweiler's fault? Or that the Broncos have lost five straight, including one to the New York Giants? Think about that for a second. The Giants just lost to the 49ers. They're 1-8, and the back pages in New York are a festival of headlines calling for Ben McAdoo to be fired. Yet they beat the Broncos, beat them by double digits. That's how bad it is for Denver. That's how bad the Broncos are right now. It's so bad that if you're a Bronco fan, you might actually think about tanking to get a higher pick. From a top five caliber team to a top five draft pick caliber team in only a matter of weeks. That's how far they've fallen. And I'm not sure they're done falling. The referee needs to stop this fight before they're seriously injured or even killed, because it's pretty clear these dudes cannot defend themselves any longer. It's like they walk into the ring against everybody and they stand right in the middle, and then the opposition is just landing haymakers. I gotta say, there's not a more disappointing team in the NFL right now than Denver. Honestly, there is not a more disappointing team than Denver. I'd say the Giants, but even they beat Denver. Bronco fan, what the hell? Now what? Who do you blame, and how are you going to fix it? There is not a quick fix here. Let's go to Northern California, Joe, to the phones. Good morning, Joe. What's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me, man. Listen to you every morning on my drive. I wish I could argue with you about the Denver Broncos, man. We stink. Our season's done. I can't agree more. Maybe we do need a tank. Defense gave up last night. You know, then you tack on special teams problems. I can't blame it on the quarterbacks. I think that we've got some decent quarterbacks in there, but with our current offensive line, I mean, if you put Tom Brady behind our line, he's going to put up the same QB rating as Osweiler did last night. If we don't have an offensive line that can protect a quarterback, we might as well just go on a three-man rotation just trying to save injuries and not get somebody hurt. Our season's done. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, no, you're right. Now, you started that call by saying, thanks, Joe. You started that call by saying, you know, I'd argue with you, but you know, you can argue with me. You certainly can argue with me, but you'd be wrong. Because what I'm saying about Denver is right. You said, I can't really blame the quarterbacks. Oh, yes, you can. You definitely can blame the quarterbacks, but you can't blame them exclusively. It's not all their fault. The defense, I think that quarterback room has somehow infected the defense, which has somehow infected the special teams. And now you've got all three facets of the team and the game, which are an absolute disaster. So, it's definitely the quarterbacks. Don't get that twisted. It's the quarterbacks, but it's a lot of other things as well, and it all starts with John Elway. And I thought Jason Lockenfora made a pretty interesting point when he talked about the head coach, Vance Joseph, and how he's in over his head, and that Elway made a reach when he made that selection, and then all of a sudden now that's coming back to bite them too. Nothing is going right for them. How do you go from being a bona fide Super Bowl contender at 3-1 to a team that only a month later we're talking about whether or not they should actually go into the tank to try to enhance their draft pick? What do you do? I mean, Vance Joseph better do something. What he's doing is not working. He has to do something. They're in a free fall, and I don't think they've hit rock bottom yet. He was asked, what are you going to do to get things turned around?
Do you think you'll have to consider making personnel changes in the coaching department before the season's over?
I'll say this. You know, when you lose like this, it's on all of us. You know, and, you know, it's a staff that we chose, you know, that we feel great about. You know, so I would say that. I would say it's on all of us, and we have to coach better and play better.
This is a team that you want to play right now. This is a team that you hope is on your schedule. This is a team that you circle as that's one we can win. And that's not the way it used to be. And when I say that's not the way it used to be, I mean like a few weeks ago. Dear Romy, the way the Broncos are playing, we may remember Dan in Denver's name longer than Vance Joseph's son, Reuben Richmond. Ultimately, and I mentioned this yesterday on the NFL and CBS prior to the game, and that was before the beatdown. I said this before the beatdown. It all goes back to John Elway. It all goes back to Elway. It starts at the very top. So for a long time, this guy could do no wrong there, could not make a bad decision, and now seemingly he can't make a correct decision. It's going to start with him. I mean, this guy, and I mentioned this yesterday, this guy more than anybody else knows how tough it is to get to a Super Bowl. Remember, it was John Elway for his entire career who said, I don't have to have that ring. I don't need that ring to validate myself. Then Terrell Davis shows up and he gets a ring, and then he gets another ring, and at the end of the day he says, you know what, I really did need those rings. This guy more than anybody else knows how tough it is to get there, yet he was counting on the likes of Brock Osweiler, Trevor Siemian, and Paxton Lynch to get him there. They're not getting him there, and neither is their defense, nor their special teams, nor their head coach. And when it all comes down to it, the guy who's going to take the blame is Elway, and he should. It starts with him. He put that whole thing together. Bronco fan, are you in a state of shock? I mean, are you angry? Are you shocked? What do you make of this, and who do you blame? This email reads, trust me, Rome, the Brock Lobster is a very accurate quarterback. Signed, the NFL sideline crewman's face, whom the Lobster blew up with an errant pass with 12 minutes left in the second quarter. Wore me salivating thinking about eating succulent buttered lobster anytime I hear the Lobster music. Signed, Paulo in Modesto. Paulo, is that what you think every time you hear that song? That you're going to crush some, quote, succulent buttered lobster? Dear Rome, even Marsha Brady thinks the Brock Lobster's sideline pass was a little off base. Justin from Melbourne. We're talking Lions football next. Detroit Lions running back Theo Riddick joins me in 10 minutes. We are efforting our third guest, which only means there is lots of time for you to call. Hit me up. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.